From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat, and we are taping this live from the National Association of Postal Supervisors Legislative Training Seminar. And I am pleased this afternoon to introduce our guest, Kevin Kosar, who is not a stranger to Naps Chat or to the postal community. Kevin is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where he studies the Congress, politics, election reform, and most important for us, the United States Postal Service. He also edits a number of publications. He has been on news media, being interviewed on different issues affecting Congress and politics. Dr. Kosar does have a PhD, has a doctorate and a master's degree in politics from New York University, and a bachelor's degree in political science from The Ohio State University. Kevin also, I first met Kevin a while ago because he was the senior most analyst at the Congressional Research Service in charge of counseling Congress and giving technical assistance to Congress as they grapple with issues affecting the Postal Service. So welcome to Naps Chat and welcome to the Legislative Training Seminar, Kevin.
Thanks for having me here. And my goodness, look at you all out here. Thanks for having me. It's terrific.
Kevin, could you, before we get into any specifics, can you talk a little about the American Enterprise Institute and your role in it?
Yeah, we're a think tank, which is basically we're a bunch of nerds. And we're supported by foundations and private givers and corporate givers. We're a not-for-profit. We don't lobby. We don't support candidates. We don't get that close to politics. We're really supposed to think hard about the policies and the issues themselves. And it's fun if you're a masochist, because your job is essentially to be trapped forever in school, studying stuff, writing stuff up, putting it out there, and hoping that you get a good grade.
When you were working at the Congressional Research Service and counseling the committee staff, personal office staff, and so forth, what type of information were you requested to provide, and what type of information did you actually provide to members of Congress and their staff?
Yeah. Well, Postal Service is the unique government agency that touches everybody in America every week, if not every day. And so the issues run that I dealt with around the entire gamut. I mean, it could be constituent service issues where a constituent writes in and says, hey, you know, I need to erect a new mailbox because some teenagers played, you know, mailbox baseball and blasted my former one, and I want to do something a little different this time. What are the regulations affecting that? So they write to their member of Congress or call their member of Congress, who passes it on to the congressional staff, and the congressional staff say, I don't know, and then they turn to me. It went from that sort of stuff all the way up to, you know, the 2006 Postal Act that Senator Collins referred to. Yeah, I worked with her. I worked with other people in Congress who were working on that, trying to think about the big questions, whether it's pension policy or what have you. And, you know, our Congress, you know, I think it's easy to think of them as like people who get elected and then never leave Capitol Hill, but there's a lot of turnover. Senator Collins is an exception. And with turnover comes people brand new to the issue and people who desperately need education. And so that was one of the things that I spent a lot of time doing, speaking to legislators, speaking to staff, and trying to get them schooled up on the basics of the Postal Service. And that's also what you guys do. You got to school them up so that they can make wiser decisions.
One of the issues that was addressed in the most recent postal reform bill in 2022 was to provide more transparency on postal performance and to create a public-facing portal where you can measure on-time delivery and so forth. There's a lot of discussion about it. As an analyst, is there value in measuring postal performance And what impact does or performance have on competitiveness of the Postal Service? Or is it of any value to measure performance?
Yeah. Top line is, I think performance is increasingly important because more and more of the Postal Service's revenues are being earned in competition with the private sector. And also consumer expectations are just getting higher. I mean, you know, I'm old enough that in high school I wrote my papers on a typewriter. Mailing letters and sending off applications in paper format to colleges, that was my world. Most of the music I like is from the 70s and 80s, and a lot of them talk about writing letters and getting stuff in the mail and that sort of stuff. But there's a whole generation of folks who have no experience with any of that. I went and guest taught a class recently of college students, and I asked them, I said, please raise your hand if you've sent six or more letters in the past year. Not a single hand went up. And, you know, one of the things I had to do in the course of that conversation was to educate them on the Postal Service because they are digital babies. They don't get it, they don't see the point of it, and they needed schooling on how integral the Postal Service is. But again, you know, with paper mail volumes going down and more revenue being derived through parcels, customer service performance is really important. I think, you know, when people put stuff in the hands of the Postal Service, they're taking a leap of faith. And you don't want that faith to be rattled. And I'm glad we're getting a piece of legislation that's going to try to deal with the mailbox security issue and the robbery of postal workers. Like, we need people to feel that when they give something to the Postal Service, they don't have to think about it. It's money in the bank. And I got to say, the people at the Postal Service headquarters, I hope they keep upping their IT game so that they can get even better and better tracking. Because, you know, your average consumer these days, they order a pizza from Domino's, they can watch the car bringing it to them on their telephone. That's, you know, the game's getting tougher in terms of people's expectations, and the Postal Service has got to keep up with it because, heaven forbid, if more people move away from it.
I want to reference a recent article you wrote in The Atlantic, a national magazine, entitled, "The Postal Service Wasn't Built for Boxes." Did you choose that title?
I suggested something along that line, yeah.
So you agree with the title?
Mm-hmm.
Because you suggest pretty significantly in the article that the Postal Service isn't really equipped right now to handle the deluge of packages and parcels that you think are going to be entering the system. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I remember one of the data points that I came up with, which was like, let's say 15 years ago, the Postal Service earned $75 billion in revenue in a single year, which was kind of the average. And of that, something like $10 billion came from things other than letters, postcards, what we think of as typical mail. Now it's about $40 billion. You think about the equipment differences, handling flats or postcards, that sort of stuff, the equipment differences. Moreover, this kind of rapid shift, this was not something that was consciously undertaken by Congress. They didn't get together and say, let's pass a new law and get the Postal Service into the business of delivering parcels because the e-commerce revolution is here. They didn't do that. Mostly they had their heads in the sand. They had no clue that this was going to happen. I think the Postal Service leadership, they had a sense that this was going on out there. But I don't think they really realized that mail volume was going to plunge and plunge so hard. Who could have predicted 2008 financial crisis? Who could have predicted COVID? I mean, it's just to go off for a second on mail volume. You look at the numbers on mail volume since the year 1900, it always goes up. Even with the Great Depression, it went down, but it went right back up and it kept growing. And then, boom, 21st century history changed. Nobody was quite ready for it. So you all have been thrown in a situation where you're trying to kind of refit what you got, whether it's mailbags, postal trucks, post offices, and make all that work while you're just getting hit with more packages than you've ever experienced before. You're doing a good job. But man, it would have been nice if you guys had had some help If there had been some preparation ahead of time to get the equipment and to start to align the resources and the people so that you could handle it.
You suggest in the article pretty strongly that Congress needs to intervene to help the Postal Service to facilitate this parcel pivot and ensure its survival. What would you envision Congress doing to intervene?
Well, you know, not least, I would think that they want to have a serious conversation about the Postal Service's capital needs, equipment, stuff. I mean, Postmaster DeJoy has said that it's going to cost another $35, $40 billion, last I heard him, in investments, whether it's mail sorting facilities, what have you, to get the Postal Service where it needs to be. Postal Service doesn't have that money in the bank. How are you going to get there if you don't have enough cash? You're not. And if you don't get there, then what happens? So that's one thing, certainly. Another thing is Congress has to sit down and figure out what do we want from this institution in the 21st century? I mean, I think the pandemic showed, and then you can go back to 2001 and when we had the anthrax and the question about whether we needed to get Cipro out or other medications to the whole of the population. Postal Service can have a homeland security function. But that's not the sort of thing that a mailer is going to pay for. That's not the sort of thing a customer is going to pay for. It should be something the American taxpayers cover. So make sure that you guys have that so that in the event of something really bad happening, you're built out, you're ready to go.
Let me take that comment that you made that, you know, Congress, the taxpayer, the government needs to really invest in this infrastructure for the Postal Service to deliver for the public need, whatever, you know, however we define that public need. Does that mean, as our vision of the Postal Service as a self-sustaining entity, is that an anachronism right now? Is that, to continue that mantra, is that self-destructive?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, we've had this self-funding model since 1970, and the model was based on the assumption that mail volume would grow. First-class mail volume, which has good margins on it, would also continue growing, and that's how you fund the costs of each year of having to go to more addresses over a further distance, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if that's not there, how are you going to do what you're going to do? You're relying on competition with the private sector, and we know that, A, competition is tough. Sometimes the other guy is just going to win out a little bit more than you are. That's the way it works in the private business world. And number two, economic downturn, the number of packages that need to be delivered is going to go down. And so how do we cover the costs of the Postal Service, which are largely fixed? You can't just lay off 100,000 people 1 year to, you know, cut your costs. You can't just shutter, you know, 5,000 post offices to cut your costs. This is not Staples. This is not a private company. So if we can't figure out a business model that enables the Postal Service to continue to be self-funding, then yeah, we got to change our language around that and say that it's mostly self-funding.
And it's almost precedential in as much as that the Congress provided first a $10 billion extra line of credit and then converting it into a grant, and then the billions of dollars for vehicle, the procurement of new vehicles, next generation vehicles. So Congress has sort of invested in the infrastructure in the Postal Service to deliver. Is that accurate?
Yeah. That was kind of what could possibly be the camel's nose slipping under the tent. I mean, because otherwise the Postal Service didn't get anything from Congress for decades. I mean, after the anthrax attacks, 9/11, 2001, that little period, I think there was like $400 million given to the Postal Service by Congress for the purpose of buying biohazard detecting machinery. But otherwise, the Postal Service has been taking care of its own costs. But we're in a different place right now, and we need to have a serious conversation about what do we want from the Postal Service. If we want 7-day mail delivery, if we all decide that, or a majority decides that, then let's do 7-day mail delivery, and let's put the resources in place and make sure it gets taken care of. If we want something other than that, we got to decide. But what we can't do is just keep drifting along as a nation and hoping everything's going to turn out all right.
As Congress and the administration invest more resources, as we think they ought to, and I think most of the people in this room would agree that, with that conclusion, more money into the Postal Service to help sustain it, whether it be pivoting to parcels or maintaining the universal service obligation, whatever that term means. Congress should up its game on oversight of the Postal Service? Should they up their game? Is there an increased role of Congress for oversight?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the Postal Regulatory Commission can only do so much. The Inspector General can only do so much. And, you know, a lot of the issues are ultimately, to some degree, policy issues and policy implementation issues. And, you know, that's where Congress needs to engage. And I just think it'd be healthier for Congress to engage, to be not paying close attention to something that's so important, and then to, you know, kind of hoot at it when they read something in newspapers about something bad happening. You know, that's just not a healthy relationship.
So Congress has a very vital role in the success of the Postal Service and sustaining the success of the Postal Service. The Postal Service doesn't exist as a federal agency or an independent establishment under the executive branch of the government. It's not on a separate island walled off from congressional interaction, regulatory interaction, everything is sort of related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one of the early experiences I had working at Congressional Research Service and watching Congress was, you know, seeing, you know, then Representative Danny K. Davis, he with the voice of God, decide that he was going to call a postal hearing because of service quality issues. He wanted to get to the bottom of what was going on, and he went out and he did a hearing out in the field, no less, which was great because he was able to get close to the people who were actually in the mix, so to speak, and who understood what was happening with the mail, both the people receiving it and the people in the Postal Service who were dealing with it. And that's, more of that needs to be done. There's got to be more of legislators getting out there and listening.
As this happens, this migration of interest into the postal space by members of Congress and by other governmental entities, what do you think the Postal Service's response will be to that? Will it be they're interfering? Will it be that we see this as a positive development? How do you see this looking back historically and looking forward?
I think it's all going to depend on whether or not oversight is carried out in good faith. You know, if you have legislators call a hearing for the sake of, you know, yelling and acting up in front of the cameras, then that's just going to poison the well. It's going to make things worse. If you have people who come with an open mind and say, can you explain to me how this is happening? Can you explain to me why this is happening? Is there any way in which we can do something from Washington, D.C., which would help fix the situation? You can have those sorts of hearings and that sort of oversight and those sorts of conversations. Very good things can happen.
You've written about this in the past, and that is that there are opportunities that a lot of folks have for the Postal Service to expand its service offerings beyond just simply moving mail, moving parcels. For example, an issue that we've talked about now that is near and dear to your heart, the shipment of wine and spirits through the mail. For those who don't know, Kevin Kosar is pretty much of an expert on bourbon, liquor, and wine, and has published books on that very topic. Is that the Kentucky? No, that's Illinois. I was looking for the Kentucky folks, but
Illinois drinks.
Do you think? I mean, should the Postal Service be venturing into these areas? Is this an extension of its current work?
Yeah. I should note that if you spend much of your day-to-day life working with and studying Congress, it's probably unsurprising that you then want to spend time with liquor. And you can turn the vice into a virtue if you can write a book about it, not embarrass your family. But no, I think the Postal Service has to be cautious about venturing into non-postal areas where they just, the core competencies are not there. I mean, the number of times private sector companies have tried to get into a new line of business, You know, you think about the AOL Time Warner merger. Hey, we have the internet tubes that can deliver. You guys got the content. Let's just bring you in-house and we'll push content through those tubes. Very smart people, but moving into a different line of business is tough, which gets to the parcels issue. This is why parcels is tough, because it is somewhat distinct. It's adjacent, at least. It's a, you know, you're receiving, you're sorting, you're delivering. But I think Postal Service does have to be careful about getting into things that are completely different. And I've also argued that, you know, the Postal Service's revenue is huge. I mean, we're talking big numbers, you know, $70, $75, $80 billion a year. If you're going into another side business, it's going to have to make profits of $500 million to $1 billion a year to appreciably improve the bottom line. And there's not a lot of businesses where you could do that, especially businesses where you don't have the private sector already busy and active. So proceed with due caution, I would say.
Final question, and this sort of encapsulates everything we've spoken about thus far today. Is the United States Postal Service still a vital component of our essential national infrastructure? And if so, how should Congress, the administration, the regulator validate this reality?
Wow. Yes, in short, there is an enormous amount of existing infrastructure, private sector, state, local government that's built off the Postal Service. I mean, simple example, jury summons. How do you get people to sit as a juror? Now, I know some of us would be like, yay, I don't have to do that. But you got to be judged by a jury of your peers. Well, you want to put people in their jury seats, you need a way to call them. And the Postal Service is it. But this is to say nothing of the, what, 170 million prescriptions that get delivered to people. I mean, do we really want to kick that off to the private sector and hope that the price is right and hope that people can get what they need? I don't think we want to do that. And one could just keep going down the list. There are any number of things that are really kind of these public goods. You can't really trust the private sector is going to provide them to the degree that we need. And so we need the Postal Service there to take care of it. And, you know, I can't draw up a plan that says this is how things should be fixed. But I will say one thing I have been banging the gong on for a long time is that it is my feeling that the money in the retiree health benefits fund, maybe two-thirds of it should be put in index funds to get a higher return than the treasury bonds that it's currently tucked in, but it's also safe. I mean, as a former federal employee, I had a TSP account. I had my money in those index funds. Really trustworthy stuff. I mean, I would say that would be one thing that absolutely should be done, because you're going to get a heck of a lot better return, and that's a lot of money, and that will definitely help. And it'll also ensure that nobody here or nobody who's working for you all ends up holding the bag if things go bad.
I want to thank Kevin Kosar for joining us this afternoon. Thank you for joining us here at the Legislative Training Seminar and also here on Naps Chat. As I always say, if you enjoy Naps Chat, share it with your friend and colleagues, and please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. Thank you.
A little.